For today's Nuggets on the Go, I'm going to bring you through the thought process using two very simple tools. If, let's say, you want to analyze a condo or apartment project, let's go. So for today's episode, we're going to do a lot of screen recording right here on my laptop screen because I'm going to bring you through a very simple thought process if you're planning to analyze any properties by yourself. Let's say if you're in the very initial phase of your purchasing or investment journey, how do you use a quick simple tool like Street Directory as well as Square Foot, which is one of my favorite tools to date. I've been using it for almost, I think, about 10 years already. And I love it from the start to the beginning. Of course, now Square Foot Research is powered by HProp. And if you're keen for a subscription, take note, this is not a collab episode. There's no sponsorship from HProp. Basically, we're just sharing with you some of the key tools that I've been using for many, many years. So I myself have been in the industry for 16 years. This is my 17th year already. And of course, I've seen the evolvement of tools from the start till now. I started with buying SPH classified newspaper every day because we need to look at the amount of listings published under the property segment. So back then, I started in the era, which was 17 years ago, using a lot of brick and mortar tools. We basically depend a lot on calling. We depend a lot on newspaper ads, classified ads. And of course, today we have the luxury of having tools right at the comfort of your home and on your mobile as well. So I'm going to bring you through the thought process that I usually adopt. Okay, so I'm going to bring it to my screen. Usually what I would do is that if let's say I want to analyze a particular condominium, just go to non-landed residential under trends and analysis, click on it, it will bring you to this page. And of course, they will showcase like, you know, some of the very trending projects within different districts. And you can, of course, you can key right in over here. So for example, let's say you want to analyze this particular condominium called Culver Melody. Let's go to District 19 just for a bit. And that will bring you up to the main page that's talking about the entire project. So there's a lot of good tools right here, entire project information. Take note, one first thing that I always look at is that I want to make sure that the time period is all reset to all data. So that will then bring me to, instead of the last 5 years by default, I can have accessibility to all the transactions starting from the first day that the property was sold. So take note, if you are hunting for a condominium project that's 99 years, you want to take note of the tenure date rather than the completion date. So there's these two fundamental key differences. So of course, this episode today is for buyers that are hunting for their first condominium for the first time, or maybe you are in the process of upgrading from HDB apartment to a condominium, or this is your first time entering into the non-landed residential space. I think this episode will be fantastic for you. So first thing to note, of course, is the tenure. Tenure, as you can see, 99 is from 2004. It means that the land age starts from 2004. If you look at certain advertisements, for example, on some of the very common portals, they usually do not put in the tenure start date. They will actually put in the completion date. Completion date, we call it the TOP date in short. And of course, in the secondary definition, there's also another date called the CSC, which is the statutory completion date. But by and large, most people, when they talk about completion date, they're talking about the TOP date. That means the date that the first-hand owners got their keys. Usually from TOP to CSC is about a year or maybe a 9 months gap. So we'll just define it as a TOP date for today's context. So basically, the important thing is to look at this because in certain projects, based on the date that the developer actually bidder or own the land towards the TOP date, there can be a vast difference. Let me give you an example. So this is Covent Melody. As you can see, 204 is the land age. So 99 starts to count down from there. Completion means the building age is from 2006. Okay. But let me just bring you to, for example, Cocoa Palms. And if you look at Cocoa Palms, it's a bit different because if you notice, the land is actually from 2008, but the completion is from 2018. We talk about this in one of our episodes under the PRB Insights, where we talk about the fact that in the whole Pasir Ris central landscape, from Livia all the way to NV Residences, to D-Nest, to Cocoa Palms, there is actually a history to understand a little bit about why certain projects were launched later, why certain projects, even like, for example, Cocoa Palms being launched later, but it still performed very well. So we actually talk about that in one of the episodes. I'm going to put the link right down below. I think that's under our PRB Insights. We're going to recall which episode is that. Okay, so first thing is to understand about this. Second thing, let me come back to the Covert Melody. That usually I look at is I want to look at the number of units right here. So this is a very important aspect to look at, because based on our PRB research, my years of experience looking at so many different properties in totality, right now I think PRB channel will have about 1,900 different episodes, which about 80% are home tours. I personally have filmed more than 1,000 home tours. And with every home tour, usually what we do is that we have a deep dive research. Let me just share with you a little bit about my listing notes here. So I just came back from, of course, today's filming at number 141 West Coast Green. And usually the amount of research that we do is basically right here. And we went through a lot of research to look at all the different price comparisons, and then our guys like to do tables like this. We compare bank valuations, we compare different notes, and of course, we want to look at, in terms of comparison, how do we fare in terms of comparative market analysis, as well as bank valuations, as well as certain different matrices. But why is it when we talk about condos and apartments, are number of units important? It's because this translate into the popularity as well as volume. So in one of our latest webinar, we talk about why volume and popularity is very important. I'm going to flash it right here for you. So in episode number 8, we talk about why transactions are so important, because transactions equate to popularity, and popularity tells us where the demand is. So I'm going to play that probably about 30-second or 45-second clip so that you can do a quick recap on what that is.
Why do we want to look at transactions? Transactions has already happened, it's the past. But why is transaction important? Because when you see a particular project or particular landed enclave or particular development or particular district with high transactions, we call this high volume. When something has high volume, it means that it has very high popularity. And without sellers, to sell the property, there's no volume, which is no good. But if there's no buyers to buy the property, there's also no volume. So it takes two hands to clap. And what does transactions further tell us? This also tells us that which area and district has more demand. And thus, transactions are driven by demand. But of course, some of you might be asking me, hey, Melvin, it's also dependent on supply. Because if nobody wants to sell, there's no transactions. True. That's true. And later, I'm going to share with you through a quiz. But before that, let's look at popularity first. All right? So what can popularity of a project or a particular enclave tell us, or a particular district? This tells us that where are people buying? Popularity also tells us what type of properties people are buying. Are they buying 3-4 bedders? Are they buying District 9 more or District 10 more? Which particular zoning in the landed enclave are they buying? This tells us what exactly people are buying. Is it inter-terraces, corner terraces, semi-D or detached homes? And we also can get to see where are the areas that sellers are willing to sell. Because if no sellers are willing to sell, there's also no transactions. So one key small little side note is that if you notice a place where sellers are willing to sell, it's an indication is that there has been some form of appreciation. And let me come to that later on. I'll just sum it up for everybody, all right? Now, the key function is that when I relate back to this particular quadrant here, this particular box right here, and we'll talk about this portion where sellers are willing to sell. Now, the rationale is because if nobody wants to sell, even if a lot of people want to buy, there are also no transactions.
Okay, so now that we understand why transactions and popularity, they correlate, why is it important that there's demand for a particular project, this helps us to understand why sometimes if you're after sort of a faster appreciation in terms of capital, which of course is not 100% guaranteed because it also depends on so many different factors. Later I'm going to show you our mode analysis because there's 10 different factors and not just volume dictates everything. So don't take just one factor as a key punch point, because there's also many, many other factors. Some projects have high number of volume, there's a high density, there's maybe 1,000 units or 800 units, but they don't perform as well because there's also so many different things that will govern or that will affect the performance of the project. So this is just one, but of course, as a general guideline, I usually advise that if you're after 3, 5, 8 years of a better chance of seeing appreciation in terms of your valuation, try to go for units that are above 300 as a first checklist to tick off. Okay, so the next thing is we want to look at the transactions volume in the last 6 to 12 months. Usually what I do is I'll scroll all the way down and then I will come downwards, and there's a very long list, ensure that you can see the last maybe 100 transactions, okay? And then that will give you a clear idea of maybe in the last 6 to 12 months all the way towards April 2022, roughly how many transactions are there. So as you can see, over here you have probably about 20-odd transactions, which means that every month you have at least about 2 transactions, which is seemingly healthy because you don't want to go into a project whereby there are no transactions. If there are no transactions, let's say in a 6 or 12 months basis, then you need to take a step back and ask yourself that question. Okay, why is it that there's no transactions? Is it because this project is undergoing an on-block season? Because take note, when the project is going through an on-block phase, the owners and the existing owners right there, they will not put their property in the market because they want to wait for the next 12 to 18 months to see how the on-block evolves, whether there'll be a successful tender by a developer, whether there'll be a successful 80%. So sometimes when there's no transactions, it means that could have be happening. Secondly, is that there, if there were to be few transactions that's happening, then you need to also ask, why is it that there are so little people that want to sell? Or is it that there's a lot of people that are putting their properties in the market, but nobody wants to buy? So the next step of investigation is to go to one of the most popular portals. So for example, you can go to Property Guru. Of course, take note that this is not a sponsored episode from Property Guru as well. It's just based on our pure recommendation on our thought process and what we usually do. Okay, so have a look. Cover Melody, only five listings available. And of course, when you look at the listings, you want to see whether there's any duplicated listings because some owners, they might not sign exclusive. Their agent, they might have 2 to 3 brokers that are selling for them. And of course, when you look at that, then roughly you can see, okay, different agents are listing the property. And then we can see, okay, there's only 5 listings. And you can ask yourself, there are 700 over properties right there. Of course, spread it into 2, 3, 4 betas. Why is it that there's only 5 listings? Is it because that the owners feel that the current price point is not worth an exit? Is it because there are a lot of our owners, even if they sell, they don't know what to buy? Or is it because in the previous round, there are a lot of listings here that's been snapped up? So things like this. Of course, if you go to maybe another project and you see like a huge amount of listings right here, there are also various reasons. So for example, if let's say you were to go to Park Astar, you'll see that, hey, why is it that Park Astar, there's 160, let me see, let me just recap again. Okay, 114 listings here. Okay, so this is because usually for projects that has just hit its TOP stage, there's a little bit more motivation for the first-hand owners to exit. And usually after a project has so-called stabilized for the next few years, you will see fewer and fewer listings. So these are just some key market sentiments on the ground, just in case you're pondering why is it that some projects have more listings, some projects have lesser listings, okay? But by and large, when you look at this on a monthly basis for a mature project like this has already been completed since 2006 until today, is already close to 16 years after completion. In terms of land age, is already 18 years. This is considered quite a healthy transaction. Now, secondly, I also want to look at the chart here. So this chart will tell me a bit more story. Because when I look at this chart, firstly, I will see that it's on an uptrend. All right. So basically from 2006 until today, you can see that most of the owners, at every point that they enter, very likely most of them have seen a profitable transaction. And of course, you can verify it from here. So out of the entire history from 2004 until today, that means from the first time the developers launched the property until today, you have 614 profitable transaction. You can also sort by the profit that people make. Highest profit is over $1 million. Lowest profit is at $2,000. Take note that this is basically based on entry and exit price. It doesn't take into consideration the buyer stamp duty, the bank interest, the property tax they pay along the years and things like that. But by and large, very easy to do a mental calculation is that buyer stamp duty is averaging between 3 to 4%. Seller, when you exit, you need to pay about 2%. Agency fee, and then of course adding in maybe the legal fees and stuff like that, you just take a entry and exit as a 6% costing without calculating MCST, property tax, and of course the bank interest. Why do I not take this three into consideration? Because for example, the reason why you have bank interest is because you chose to leverage. Because somebody that is paying full cash, they have no bank interest. So just for calculation's sake, in terms of entry and exit costing, usually we take 3-4% entry, 2% exit, all right? And why is it that we don't take MCST into consideration? We don't take property tax into consideration because everybody have to pay them. MCST is because you pay to contribute to a sinking fund and then you want to enjoy the facilities. Property tax, everybody have to pay. Even if you're staying in the HDB lender or condo, you have to pay. So just to calculate this for simple calculation reason, entry exit is about 6%. So when you look at this, there's also 13 unprofitable transaction. Why is that happening? And of course, you want to see when did they buy and when did they exit. Now, of course, when we talk about this line chart, then of course, it's high time that we take out the cooling measures chart as well. So I'll take out the cooling measures chart because with that, you can then have a little bit more so-called insights to look at why is it that certain projects, they perform in a certain behavior. We talk about that a lot in many of our series, but as a quick glimpse, cooling measures came in after 2009. The heaviest round was in 2013 because ABSD and TDSR came in. And after 2013, developers started to launch smaller units, right? Now, Covert Melody was actually launched in this era, 2004 to 2006. So this was the previous era. So you still get pretty sizable three-bedders right there because if you look at the size of the units over here, usually you can also look at this breakdown over here, which is one of my favorite as well. So I like to come here. I like to look at this. Basically, you can see the two-bedders are between 800 to 900 square feet, which was true to the fact that before 2013, a lot of the units are created in a bigger fashion. And of course, you also have like 2 plus study, 104 square feet. So if you want to verify, you can just quickly Google Covert Melody. Back end, we have a lot of tools that we have already subscribed. So, but this, if let's say you have no subscription or anything, just Google Covert Melody floor plans and then try to verify in terms of the sizing. Of course, you got to see a lot of different portals right here. Very simply, I like to go to this website, which is also not owned or affiliated with us. So you can get to see 2 bedders, and roughly you can get to see, okay, the 2 bedders are about 883 square feet, 947 square feet, which is the large version of a 2 bedder. It's not even a 2 plus study. And then, of course, you have 893 square feet. There's a home shelter, enclosed kitchen, wide angle. Oh my goodness, look at this. Wide angle, living, dining, fantastic layout. Rooms are huge. And of course, if you go to the 3 bedders, they are generally huge in nature. Nowadays, 3 bedders are about 900 plus to 1,000 square feet. 1281 square feet is the 4 bedder size today in 2023 in new launches. And usually when you look at this, then you can then move on and then you can see, okay, how big is the 3 plus study? They're about 1442 square feet. And then you try to get a sensing of how big are the 4 bedders, is about 1765 square feet. That will then bring us back to Covert Melody square foot. So then we can have a nice understanding right here that based on this, you can also, of course, come to have a look at this website to have a look at the project information in terms of specification. So usually when you come to this page, this will give you a very good sensing. Okay, 2 bedders, 91 units, 3 bedders, 188, 4 bedders, 190. It's quite well spread. Something to just take note is that in certain projects, when there is an overpopulation in terms of a particular type of unit. For example, let's say you see this project, 800 units, but 400 units belong to the smallish version, 1 and 2 bedders. And then maybe 3 bedders, there's only like 100 units, 4 bedders, like 100 units. Then you need to see the spread. Now, sometimes if there is too much concentration on small units, this affects the behavior when you want to exit in the resale market. Because for example, maybe certain buyers are hunting for certain projects that has more families and they do not want to have too much of the units being tenanted out because they want to live in maybe an environment that there are more homeowners. And sometimes certain projects that has more density in terms of 1 bedders or maybe 2 bedders, and they tend to be rented out more, especially if they are located in the RCR zoning, very near the MRT, very tenant centric. Then when it comes to home buyers that wants to buy for own stay, maybe that will be one of their consideration points. Over the years, certain things have already evolved. In the past, this concern, which is not prevalent right now, in my context, is that in the past, sometimes people would think that, hey, if a project has a lot of smaller units, the smaller units tend to command a higher PSF, bigger units, lower PSF. Now, in the last 3 years, we have seen this phenomenon not present anymore. because the bigger units have already caught up with the smaller units in terms of PSF. Now, if you look at a lot of projects right now, just for example, this 2 and 3 bidders, let's come back to Cohen Melody. If you look at their performance, you look at 904 square feet, transacted at 1449 PSF, and that was in March 2023. 1259 square feet, the 3 bidder, also transacted about 1437 PSF. But in the past, it was very different. Why was it different is that in the past, usually there is like, it can go up to about $100 over per square foot. Just have a look at this transaction here. 904 square feet, a 2-bidder was doing at 995 PSF, but you would not be able to get that for a 3-bidder because like averagely, you can see 3-bidder in about the same time period doing at about $100 less or even $190 less per square foot. And that is what I meant in the past. But in recent years, especially after the pandemic, has shifted the attention to bigger units. A lot of people are preferring larger units because they work from home, stay at home, study from home. A lot of home businesses are taking place. This is just a shift in terms of demographics behavior, something that we have to take into consideration as well. The bigger units now has matched up in terms of PSF level. And in fact, now a lot of things are shifting towards the big units already in terms of popularity and demand. So this is just something for you to take note. And that's one thing I look into consideration as well. Now, the next thing is that I want to see, after knowing that how many people has made profitable transactions, then this is where the dilemma sets in. Because from a consumer point of view, you might be thinking two things. Number one, this project is performing well. Will it continue to perform well in the next 5, 8, 10 years when I want to sell? Or will the graph be tapering downwards? Okay. Second thing is that you might also think, hey, by buying this project, am I helping the first few owners to make profits? Because I will be the one that's entering and they will be enjoying the profit. So that is usually something that will go through the buyer's mind. There could also be a third thing that could be going through a buyer's mind is that, should I go for a project that is like downwards in terms of its performance so that I can catch it at the bottom and so that it has a chance to U-turn back up? So usually that is probably the 2 to 3 things that will go through a person's mind when you want to buy a project like this. Now, let me share with you my perspective. Yes, I've seen projects that have done the U-turn, but in our analysis, that usually takes a long, long time to happen. Later, I'm going to show you probably one project just to end off this episode. Now, the reason is because there's a certain set of behaviors that happens in a condominium development. Okay, firstly, to explain the phenomenon, let me give you the quick summary first. The quick summary is that projects that tends to go on up tier tends to have a higher chance to continue the uptrend. Why is that so? Now, it has a lot to do with the project itself, because take note, we're not talking about a singular project. We're talking about a community. Now, a condominium is a community. When you buy into a strata development, you're buying into a community. Why? Because the very fact that you need to contribute 2 sets of money every month into your MCSD already tells you you are buying into a community. So firstly, you pay for maintenance fee, all right? Secondly, you pay for something called a sinking fund. Sinking fund is used when, let's say after 7 or 8 years, your condo calls for a tender from painters to repaint the exterior of the project. They will use and tap into a sinking fund. When your lift needs to go for a major upgrading, they tap into the sinking fund. And sometimes when there's not enough sinking fund, they call for additional fund for all the owners. Everybody maybe contribute $1,000 and pay into that sinking fund so that you can do work together. Now, this is, of course, the community fund. So in short, sinking fund is called community fund. So when you buy into a strata development, firstly, take note, you're not owning the land. You're owning the airspace occupying the land. And everybody that occupies a strata unit in the airspace, they own the land technically together for that 99 years or maybe for that freehold period. That is the reason why when you buy into a strata condominium or apartment, you're buying firstly into the rights of your airspace as well as you're buying into this community. That's why everybody that owns an airspace can come down to utilize the common usage and the pool, the gym and everything, the clubhouse and all that kind of stuff, right? Now that we know that, okay, this is sort of like buying into a community, let's move on to the second point. The very fact that you are buying into this community with 778 units and you're one of the owners here, that means you have 777 other neighbors that also own this community together. There is this new thing that will then evolve. I call it the herd mentality. herd mentality happens on two fronts. Number one, when everybody buys into the project when it was launched by the developer at the show flat, and let's say from year 204 until 205, and we can then easily track back to the transactions. You just need to go down here and look at this new sale and when did the new sale end. All right? So new sale will end around here. Okay? The last new sale concludes in 207. That means there were some balance units because perhaps 06, there was like a subprime crisis. All right? So it took a little bit long to sell of this project. And I remember Cohen Melody and maybe Cohen Residences back then, they probably had like two launch phases. I need to recall my memory, but I remember very clearly Cohen Residences has two launch phases because there was a subprime crisis back then in US, and things were a little bit wonky in a global fashion. So it took a little bit to sell, but of course all the owners that bought that time, to have a look at how much PS effort it was back then, it's only like $500-$600 per square foot. Okay, so now when you look at this, it means that this project sold out between 204 to 207, and all these owners that bought back then, they all bought it at about $500 per square foot to $600 per square foot. It's quite consistent. And when you buy into that together, what's going to happen is that you will think the same way. Why is that so? It's because just imagine now you bought into a brand new project here in today's day and age, and let's say you bought it at $2,000 per square foot in the year 2023, with the rest of the 700 odd buyers that bought at the show flat at the same time, and you waited 3 years for this project to complete, what's going to happen is that when you take your keys 3 years later, you open the door, you go into a unit, you bought at $2,000 per square foot, what are the chances that after waiting for 3 years in the year 2026, somebody walks up to you and said, hey, I understand you bought this property at 3 years ago, 2023, $2,000 per square foot. Can you sell me today, 2026, at $2,000 per square foot? Now, what would you say? Would you sell it? The high chance is that likely you won't, because maybe you have bought a unit for stay. You don't want to sell. You will either just rent it out or you will move in. You have waited 3 years, because maybe these 3 years you are staying with your in-laws or maybe at your parents' place or you've been renting. Finally, you got a chance to move into this brand new project. You wouldn't stay. And the gist and the crux of the herd mentality is that you will not be the only owner to think like this. All the 700 owners will be thinking like this, and they will be having the same mentality. Maybe their mindset is that I bought at $2,000 per square foot. I will only sell if somebody offered me $2,003 to $2,004 per square foot. I want to see at least a $400 PSF gain. Then I will part with my key. If not, there's no motivation for me to sell because I'm doing okay. I still am running my business. I'm having my job. We're doing income. My kids are happy here. I don't want to sell. So this is the first herd mentality that happens in a project series through time. The first one is that during the launch phase to the key collection phase, there's this first round of herd mentality. We call it a group think. A group think, G-R-O-U-P-T-H-I-N-K, a group think will happen here. And then moving on, the group think will actually stretch. What do I mean by this? Now, take note, when you look at this graph, some of the owners that have been staying there from day one, they still have not sold yet. And they have been staying there since 2006 until today for the last 17 years. They have bought at $500 to $600 per square foot. A three-bedder back then cost them only about $700,000 to $800,000. Now, they can sell a three-bedder for maybe about $1.8 million if you've seen the asking price just now. So they bought at about $800,000. They can exit at $1.8. They are sitting on a profit margin of $1 million. There's no need for them to panic sell. They can take equity arrangement for the bank to extract the value and the capital. If they want to sell because they want to move to a next home, a bigger home, or a landed property, or they want to downsize and wait 15 months to pay off HDB, they can easily do that. And that could be one of the reasons why COVID mandate has only 5 listings. And because of this, the chances of this project going on an uptrend is even more. Why? It's because the holding power of the existing group of owners that have not exited, or people that have bought it maybe in 2010, at 700 plus per square foot, bought it at 2012 at 1030 per square foot, and today is averagely about $1,400 to $1,500 per square foot. And take note, every time as an existing owner, if let's say you were to be somebody that is owning a property in Cohen Melody, you see that the last transaction is at 1471 PSF, and you look at what is available now in the market. Let's say you go back to Property Guru, you type in Colvin Melody. The mindset of the existing owner is that I don't want to sell lower than my past neighbor. That is also the reason why there are owners that are calling for 1480 or maybe even 1680 or 1526 PSF. And that is one of the core rationale, because the fresh new owners that want to put a property in market, they will reference to a few key data points. Bank valuation, how much did my neighbor sold previously? What are the people that are putting their property in the market now asking for? I think these three things combined, bank valuation, past transaction, and asking price of other people now, then I form a decision that now if I want to put my property in the market, if I'm high, low floor, facing the road or facing the pool or facing the landed facing, and my renovation has sunk in, my next one that I want to buy, I take all these things combined and I form a decision on how much I want to price my property. So usually by understanding this, then it gives us a little bit more insights on how the existing owners are thinking. Then it helps us to make a nice viewpoint of collaborating all this thought process to analyze a project together. So all this explanation actually came from that question of, will a project that is performing like this continue to perform better? Or is better for me to hunt for projects that's going downtrend and buy at the bottom? Now, firstly, to summarize, a chance of a project doing like this to continue its uptrend is much higher because the existing owners are sitting on a higher profit margin and there's no urgency for them to sell. Now, secondly, a project that is going downtrend, sometimes it takes a longer period for them to hit a plateau. And when all other neighboring projects has already escalated to a higher level, then they will start to do an upturn. It's sometimes a little bit difficult to hunt for that bottom. It might still go down a little bit more because maybe some of the owners, they have already waited for a very long time and they are tired already. There are projects everywhere that perform in the uptrend and downtrend. And there's no clear-cut rule of which district have more of such low-performing projects or which districts have higher-performing projects. And that's the reason why we develop moat analysis. Because with moat analysis, this is our PRB in-house condominium moat analysis where we have a proprietary system. We fresh feed all the API of entire condos and apartment projects into our system, and that allow us to rank it. So for example, if I want to rank Colvin Melody, I can do it. I want to maybe look at the project beside them, Colvin Residences, I can do it. And then I want to maybe also rank Colvin Regency, because I'm thinking about these three projects, they're all near to Colvin MRT station. I punch in the numbers, that gives me the results on a little bit more insights. But let's have a look at this. Look at some examples here. This is a property at Newton. It's on a downtrend. This is a property at D19. It's on a plateauing stage. This is a property at D11. Plateau for the last 9 years. This is a project in D23. Went downtrend, U-turning up slightly. All right, after a good 9 years as well. And then, of course, this is in D9, downtrend. It has not U-turned yet. So basically, in summary, not all projects will see appreciation in 3, 5, 8 years' time. Sometimes it takes 10, 15, 20 years. And what are some of the key fundamental things that we need to take note of is that we need to use a combination of tools nowadays. So, for example, moat analysis is just one of the tools. It helps us to see in terms of ranking which one performs better in terms of ballast curve or quantum effect, MRT effect, exit audience, and stuff like that. And in PRB, when you come to our consult session, if you want to leave all this deep research down to our consultants, this is something that we do on a daily basis for all our clients and customers. And of course, we love to do it because this is our bread and butter. We live and breathe real estate every day. We look at all these charts every day. Come for a consult session at our PRB office and we'll be very happy to chat with you a little bit more. And for today's episode, we hope that I've added value to you in terms of just sharing some of the thought processes based on some economics data on a micro basis. And I'm going to cover this series of analysis of projects. I'm going to analyze real projects together with you on a 10 series approach, and then we can analyze some of the key fundamental behaviors behind some of these graphs, charts, and behaviors over time. And I hope to see you on the next episode. In the meantime, take care.